The Dr. Shoup Show isn't trying to cause dental consumers to revolt. We're not trying to pull patients away from other practices. We don't need to.
You've left my locale and you now reside in San Antonio, Texas. Why on earth do you come halfway across the country to get your teeth cleaned?
I always said if I ever moved, I told my husband I will fly back to see Dr. Shoup. Keeping in mind, I had a lot of problems with my teeth. They bothered me. They were sensitive. After spending time with you, my teeth absolutely never bother me. I get compliments all the time on my smile. Not only do they feel good, but they look good.
Patients travel from out of state and outside of Indianapolis and Indiana to visit the doc's office because your host of this show doesn't treat based on billables. He treats to prevent ongoing dental problems and to save you money long term. So start your eye-opening experience at ddsradio.com right now. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. It is great to have you here. Thank you very, very much. You know, I tell you every time, it is an honor when you decide to spend time with me. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. This is where you come to become smarter, better informed, better educated, a more savvy dental, medical, health, nutrition, wellness, you name it. You're going to learn it here, and you're going to know more about it than anybody else. The important part of it is, not only are you going to know the right questions to ask, you're going to know the answers that you are going to expect to get. So you're going to be ahead of the curve with everybody. And you know how this works. We start with Dental School 101. We take a basic concept and we're going to dissect it down for you. Today, is it possible that how and how well you brush your teeth could have an impact on your likelihood of getting colon, pancreatic, or liver cancer? I know you're scratching your head, but trust me, I'm going to tell you about the connection. Then we go to ask the expert. You know, Uncle Randy always likes to find various pieces of research and information that, to the normal eye, don't look like they tie together very well. Well, I've got two of them. Today I have a twofer for you. Not a toother, but a twofer. Two for one. We have two research articles, completely separate, completely independent, but they absolutely dovetail together. Makes a huge difference for you thinking about your children, your kids, your family, and especially if you have somebody that is thinking about having a new child come on board. So a really important topic about keeping your children healthy and safe. And then you get to meet a good friend of mine. Now, today I'm going to introduce you to Janet. Now, many of you, I know you look me up, you know where I am, and you go, well, that's just awfully far. I'm not sure I want to go that far to go to the dentist. Well, she'll tell you why she goes through Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, and half of Indiana to get to see old Uncle Randy. But first, when damp, rainy, wet weather comes around, can you tell that this weather's coming? Did your grandfather always used to say he could predict the weather because of his achy joints? Is it reality or imagination? I'm going to tell you right now.
Time to go under the microscope.
It really makes you think.
Well, particularly this time of year when the weather flips and flops from one extreme to the next, so many people come in and they tell me, oh gosh, my arthritis is hurting, my joints are hurting, this hurts, I feel this, I feel that, and they try to predict the weather. Well, some really cool researchers started thinking about that and trying to decide, is this really true? Is there something to this or is there not? Many people insist their joints ache more when it rains, but that popular notion might not be true at all. A matter of fact, it may be all wet. I don't write this stuff, folks. This is from the science articles. They try to be funny, but that's the best that they can do. A study of more than 1.5 million older Americans found that people were no more likely to visit the doctor with joint or back pain during rainy weeks than sunny ones. Even among people with arthritis, there was no connection between rainfall and patient complaints about aches and pains. The findings cast serious doubt on the idea that an achy knee can predict rainfall, says the lead researcher, Dr. Jenna, who's the associate professor at Harvard Medical School. Here's what Dr. Jenna says. No matter how we analyzed it, we didn't see any sort of a relationship. The idea that weather affects bodily symptoms goes back to ancient times, he noted. And still today, many people firmly believe that certain weather conditions make their joints and their achingness worse. Rainfall, as well as humidity and changes in barometric pressure, are among the conditions that most often catch the blame. This is such a common belief, Dr. Jenna said, and some adults, he said, have suggested there's something to it, but we have looked at everything and we cannot find even the smallest connection. So what these guys did, they turned to the data for 1.5 million Medicare beneficiaries. And here's what they did. This is pretty clever. They looked at 11 million doctor visits between 2008 and 2012. They matched that information with rainfall data from the U.S. weather stations. And so they looked at all of this data, these people making visits to their doctor. Then they looked at the weather data on when it rained, you know, and then they looked like a couple of days before it was going to rain. And so then they said, well, are people going to the doctor? And is there a spike? Is there an increase in people complaining about my aching joints before the weather changed, before it started to rain? Now, there's a doctor called Dr. Chap Sampson, who's a member of the American College of Rheumatology. He said there really doesn't seem to be a relationship between achy joints and weather. But he said there's really a kind of a little problem here. He said most people that get this achy joint stuff don't necessarily call their doctor and make an appointment to go be seen. They just simply go, well, the weather's going to change, the joints are achy, all that kind of stuff. What Dr. Sampson thinks is this. His patients bring this up all the time, but he says it's part of human nature to be biased towards seeing certain patterns. We humans like to see patterns. And so we see these patterns, and if our joints ache, that is a recognizable pattern. If it changes and it becomes rainy, that is a recognizable pattern. He said, but if people have an achy joint that is kind of their part of their normal routine and the weather doesn't change, they don't recognize it. It doesn't stand out. Therefore, they don't make any connection to it. So he says, people read patterns even when there aren't any patterns. And so the data indicate that there is no connection. You cannot predict the weather. Leave that to the Farmer's Almanac. You cannot predict the weather because your knees or your hips or your joints ache and are sore. I'm sorry, folks. It just doesn't have any science behind it whatsoever. But don't worry. We've got lots of other science that you can play with. Now, up next, could it be how well you brush your teeth influences colon, liver, or pancreatic cancer? You're going to really be surprised about this one right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. Yes, healthcare costs are on the rise, but you mustn't neglect taking care of your physical well-being. That's why the doctor goes beyond talking teeth. This is the Dr. Shoup Show, discussing whole body health while making you a smarter dental consumer. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Hey, what a beautiful day. All I need is a taste.
Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you very, very much. You know, we get to talk about some really cool and interesting things on the program, and this is one of them. I've been watching this research, listening to it, and following it for a while, and I thought, okay, it's relevant enough, and it is credible enough that I'm going to bring it to you all. You are a really discerning group of people. Congratulations. You're not the average listener. I really appreciate that you're here. So here's what it is. You know, I teased you a little bit by saying, could it be that the way you brush your teeth, could it have any effect whatsoever on if you get or have or the effect of colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, or liver cancer? And the quick answer is we don't know exactly, but there is a mounting amount of evidence that is indicating that cancer cells, particularly colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, and then if colon cancer metastasized to any places, it carries with it, there is almost a helper. And the helper is a particular bacteria that's found in the human mouth. I'll give you a little bit of the beginning of this research article. A mysterious bacterium found in up to half of all colon tumors also travels with the cancer as it spreads. Now, here's the important thing. There's no reason in the world we don't understand or see a mechanism by which you take a group of cells in your colon that have made a carcinoma conversion. Okay, they've turned into cancer cells. They're looking at these cancer cells, and these cancer cells oftentimes will what is called metastasize. You know about that. It's where these cancer cells break off, and they primarily go through either the lymphatic system or the blood system and get to other areas of the bottom. They take hold, other areas of the body, they take hold and start growing there. Well, there are these bacteria that we see that hitch a ride on these metastasizing cancer cells, and they wind up in other places. So we don't understand how that could possibly happen. The bacteria that we're talking about is called Fusobacterium nucleatum. Fusobacterium nucleatum. And it plays a really important role in the growth of cancer, but we don't understand why. We don't understand how it gets the job done. And this was all published in the journal Science. And here's how this laid out. Here's how this happened. This is really brand new research. It all began back in 2011. In 2011, there's a doctor by the name of Meyerson who works for the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, really big research institute, very, very credible. And there was a Dr. Robert Holt who works for Simon Fraser University in British Columbia. They were both looking at colon cancer cells. Now, I will tell you, they're not the only two people in the world doing this. There are research centers all over the world that all look at colon cancer, they look at pancreatic cancer, and they were all looking at, and they were both completely independent, not talking to each other, didn't know anybody was doing. The folks at Dana-Farber didn't know what the folks at Simon Fraser were doing, and vice versa. They both simultaneously published these articles saying, hey there, cancer friends in the research community. We're looking at these colon cancer cells, and we found this darn fusobacterium stuck to a whole bunch of these cancer cells, and we have no idea why these bacteria are living in these cancer cells. Did they get absorbed by the cancer, or did these little bacteria look over there and go, hey guys, there's some colon cancer cells, let's go play over there. And then the bacteria invaded it, and so they started looking, they published it, and then they looked and said, hey, we're finding the same thing. Then this spread throughout the research community around the world, literally, and everybody is starting to say, hey, we started going back and looking at our old slides, we started looking at our old tissue samples, and son of a gun, we found these darn fusobacteria in our studies too. We thought it was just an artifact, something weird, but you're saying you're seeing this now with fresh cells? They go, yeah. So we have no idea. The research is so new, we don't really understand it. And they looked at colon cancer cells. Then they said, okay, let's go find out where's the most likely place colon cancer cells go. It metastasizes primarily to the liver. So then they said, well, let's go look at these liver cancers that have come from the colon cancer cells. So they went, started to go look at the liver cancer cells, and guess what? These darn fusobacterium are in the liver cells as well. So then they said, well, we've got to figure this stuff out and see what's going on. So then they took human colon cancer cells. They found people with colon cancer. Now, this is not HeLa cells. They don't do that stuff anymore, okay? So, but they took these colon cancer cells and they embedded them in a mouse. They let the colon cancer grow in the mouse, and that'll happen. You can take human cancer cells and put it in a mouse, and the mouse will get the cancer. So they took these human cancer cells, and they put it in the mouse, and the mouse got colon cancer. They then surgically took the colon cancer out of the mouse and put it in the mouse's son, So they went one generation. They let that little mouse get colon cancer. Then they surgically took that colon cancer out and put it in his son. So now we're 2-3 generations out. They went 4 generations with these cancer cells. And guess what they found? Fusobacterium in the 4th generation cancer cells. These bacteria are lopping onto, hiding, and staying with these cancer cells. So Fusobacterium happens to be really, really, really sensitive to an antibiotic called metronidazole. Metronidazole is a fantastic antibiotic, very wide spectrum, kills the heck out of stuff, and it likes to kill the heck out of Fusobacterium. Fusobacterium, highly susceptible to metronidazole. So what they did was they took these mice that had these liver cancer, these cancers that had the fusobacterium in it, and they pumped them full of metronidazole. Guess what happened? The cancer cells stopped growing. The cancer tumors actually got smaller. Didn't go away altogether, but it went down. So they went, that's pretty interesting. So then they took other mice that they had given the colon cancer to, and they pumped them full of amoxicillin. They pumped them full of clindamycin. They pumped them full of Z-Pax, all other sorts of antibiotics. Nothing worked as well. Nothing slowed down the tumors because all those other antibiotics, Fusobacterium, that's just like giving them, you know, a bag of potato chips. They don't care. It doesn't hurt them. So the thought is, okay, is there some connection between these fusobacterium, these bacteria? Maybe when these cancer cells start to get going, maybe these bacteria look at these cancer cells and go, I like this stuff. This stuff is really good. And then they go over and create this kind of a symbiotic relationship where the bacteria actually helps the cancer cells grow. Or is it that the bacteria give off some sort of an enzyme or something or other that alters the immune system of the human so that the immune system of the human isn't as effective? Because that's one of the big problems with cancer cells. Cancer cells have this wonderful cloaking mechanism. Cancer cells can hide in plain sight. Your body's immune system, which would normally go through and see these funky-looking raggedy cells and go, well, let's chop these things up. We don't need them. Let's get rid of them. Your cancer cells have this cloaking mechanism, and your immune system goes rolling right past them and goes, yeah, it's funky-looking weird stuff, but we're just not going to mess with it. So that's why, that's one of the reasons cancers kind of don't have any sort of a stopping mechanism with your immune system. It's possible these bacteria are doing something that creates the cloaking mechanism. Because once you kill off the bacteria with metronidazole, the tumor's growth diminishes. It doesn't go away, but it dramatically reduces. So this is brand new, cutting-edge information. This is absolutely tremendous, because when we think about colon cancer, when we think about liver or pancreatic cancer, these researchers are saying they found this fusobacterium in all of these cancers. And this bacteria happens, it occurs. You can't kill it off because we acquire it on a regular basis. It's in our mouths, it's in our gut, all over the place. That's why I said, is it possible that by brushing your teeth better, you could have an effect on colon or liver or pancreatic cancer? Not that toothbrushing is going to do it, but I just wanted you to get your mind going and thinking about that. So this is brand new cutting edge information, brand new research. All of it hasn't even been published yet, but it is opening some really interesting and exciting doors in terms of cancer research that we never, ever, ever, in all the time that we've been doing this, never thought about it before. In that, is there a connection between the naturally occurring bacteria in your body and how well or efficiently or poorly cancer cells grow? Isn't it cool? Don't you learn cool stuff here? Don't you love this stuff? I love this stuff. This is really fun. Now, two pieces of research. Uncle Randy's going to do one of his famous connections for you, and this could have a massive effect directly on the health of your family. You're going to want to hear what it is right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at DTSradio.com. Microscopic dentist by day, relentless researcher by night, worldwide leader in dental and overall health commentary, day in and day out.
That is a great idea.
Those are the only kind I have.
He is Dr. Randy Shoup, and this is the Dr. Shoup Show. Online at ddsradio.com.
Well, it's always great to have you here. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate it. And this is one of those special twofers. I've gone out and found these research articles that are done by completely separate groups, completely separate points of view that they're making, but there is such a massive overlap in these two. And I'm going to bring this to you because if you take the data that I'm going to present, if you take the information that we're going to talk about and apply it to yourself, you can make a massive, huge health improvement in your family. You can, number one, save yourself some absolutely terrifying, life-threatening situations, and you can save yourself a ton of money over your lifetime. So here's the research, here's the data, and it has to do with asthma. And here's the first headline, here's the first title of the first research article: Asthma Worse for Overweight Preschoolers in this New Study. This preschoolers have asthma. Their asthma is worse simply from the factor if these kids are overweight compared to those with healthy weights. Heavy kids, preschoolers, with untreated asthma had 37 more days with symptoms in a year, according to the new report. So if you have a preschooler kiddo that has asthma and is overweight, that overweight kiddo is going to have 37 more days per year that kiddo is going to suffer with their asthma symptoms as compared to a kiddo with normal weight who has asthma. And that by itself ought to get you. This study, the findings show that early life weight gain does worsen the severity of asthma in the youngest patients. The study leader was Dr. Lang, Duke University School of Medicine Children's Pulmonary Function Lab. So nearly 10%, this is a statistic that I think is really kind of scary, 10% of the children in the United States have some diagnosed form of asthma. 10%, 1 out of 10. That's a lot of kids. And so if we're looking at that large of a population of people, 10% of the population having asthma, and then if you add on top of that kids that are heavier, and so we all know that there is an obesity trend in the United States, and even preschoolers can become tremendously obese. And what they're talking about is kiddos that have a BMI, basal metabolic index, of 80 in the 84 percentile, which means these are really, you know, on the top end of the kids that are heavy. These kiddos have respiratory condition is the leading cause of them having to go to the emergency room and for hospitalization among preschoolers. That's why I said these are life-threatening problems. These are not just where little Johnny or little Sally can't breathe very well, give them their inhaler. These kiddos that are preschool age, are heavy, and have asthma, these children die. These children get into a respiratory crisis and they crash, and they no longer are living in your family. You've lost them. So if you can do something to help shift this incredibly important disease process away from the crisis end, you've done your family a massive favor. If you can reduce the need for all the medication that these kiddos require in terms of inhalers and anti-inflammatories and all the steroids and all these sorts of things, then bronchodilators and steroids, a whole plethora of stuff. You've saved your family a ton of money, okay? So these kiddos need to be well below the 84th percentile, okay? Because they're going to spend 37 days on average, which means some kids are going to spend a heck of a lot more days than that in a year. That's a month. Okay, 37 days, that's more than a month. Think about it that way. That's a whole 1/12 of your year is spent in a respiratory crisis that's made worse because the kids are just heavy. Now, here's the other piece of data that is completely unrelated, separate from this research. And here is the title of this other piece of research. Mom's soda habit in pregnancy may boost kids' odds for asthma. Okay, we're not talking about the kids at all. We're talking about moms. And here's the thing with this. If a woman consumes 2 sodas a day while she is pregnant, regular sodas, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, you know, Mountain Dew, Dr. Pepper, whatever it is, regular sodas, this woman has a 60% greater chance of her children having asthma. They will be born with a 60% greater chance of having asthma as they grow up as children. Okay? And that's huge. We know that we have a 10% population, 10% of our population, the children have asthma. But if the moms drink soda, their likelihood of producing a child that has asthma is 60% greater. That's gigantic. And the only thing you need to do to reduce that down is for women who are pregnant to not drink carbonated soda. Don't drink soda. And here's what they think is the problem. Fructose. High fructose corn syrup. High fructose corn syrup is the problem. Increasingly, the researchers say, we're understanding that the process that puts kids on a trajectory for obesity and asthma start in pregnancy. This may give us some clues to how early life programming of asthma starts in utero. These kids are programmed to have asthma as they are fetuses in the mom's stomach. Are you getting how significant this is? Talk about this kid having having cards dealt to this little baby who has nothing to do with it, has no ability whatsoever, but you could be condemning this infant to a lifetime of asthma and all of the health risks associated with it simply because the pregnant mom had to have her two sodas a day. Isn't that the most ridiculous trade-off in the world? I'm sure most people don't know about it, but here's the cool part. You do now. You understand this. You've heard the research. You've heard the data. So here's where I'm going to draw these two pieces of information together. Here's where we're going to dovetail them so that you understand it and it is going to make sense to you. Here's how this works. You take a woman who is pregnant who likes to drink soda. Okay, she drinks two sodas a day. She puts a massive slug of high fructose corn syrup into her body. We know by itself, two sodas a day in a pregnant woman increases the obesity of the child, and it increases the child's risk of having asthma by 60%. Why does this happen? High fructose corn syrup, only metabolized by the liver. Okay, high fructose corn syrup in those concentrations throws off the gut biome, okay, the gut bacteria in the mom. It's the gut bacteria in the mom that creates all these little markers and all these little signalers and all these little things that wind up in the fetus and help the fetus develop a really, really good immune system, all right? They did experiments that said, well, maybe it's just the sugar. Maybe it's the fructose in the just the sugar amount. They used a double-blinded, and they tried absolute just pure fruit. Let the moms eat oranges and grapefruit, all of which have high concentrations of fructose. And they let them do fruit juice, had high concentrations of fructose. The difference was if you had just juice that was like sugary drink, the same effect as the two sodas. If you gave the mom fructose in its natural state, in that like natural juice, or they ate the fruit, didn't get the same effect because there's so much fiber and there's so many other key minerals and elements that can't be reproduced except in the natural fruit, didn't get the same effect. So it's this processed stuff, high fructose. So here's the thing. You put that much fructose in somebody, you spike the inflammatory response in the person. You remember we've talked about that? You put all that fructose running through your body, it increases your inflammatory response. Inflammatory response then triggers and changes the bacterial biome in your gut. The bacteria biome in your gut produces so many of these little hormones and chemicals and signalers in order to help develop the immune system of the infant. So now you have this fetus in the mom, and the bacteria in the mom's gut and her inflammatory responses are spiked out because she's drinking soda. So the immune system in the mom gets compromised. Therefore, the developing immune system in the fetus gets compromised. Okay. Now the fetus is born. The fetus doesn't have any good bacteria to be absorbed into their system from the mom because the mom's wiped out all of the good bacteria because of all the high fructose corn syrup and the inflammatory response. So the kid now has a compromised immune system, the infant. It also doesn't have the proper bacteria in its gut to metabolize all of its nutrition. So the mom now has a 60% chance of this child already having asthma, predisposed to asthma. Now the kid has the wrong bacteria in their gut, so they can't metabolize food worth a diddly darn, so they get fat. Do you see how all this dovetails together? Do you see how it all makes sense? Do you see how it all follows? So you can go from a woman who is relatively healthy but has to have two Cokes a day while she is pregnant ultimately to the end point where she has a baby who can't do anything except put on weight and get fat and start to have symptoms of asthma. She takes the child to the doctor. The doctor says this child has asthma, and now you're on an inhaler and albuterol and all that stuff for the rest of the child's life because you had to have two Cokes a day. Do you see how all this works? It's wonderful. It's amazing when you put these pieces of research together and you just simply very methodically think them through and you know what you know the things that I've taught you, you understand these processes, and so now you know how it works. Therefore, what I said before, you can make minuscule, tiny, they may not be easy, but they're tiny, minuscule, life-changing and pocketbook-changing, because you're not buying Cokes. You can simply not drink high-fructose corn syrup soda while you're pregnant, and you have a massive benefit for the next generation simply by something you didn't do as opposed to something you did do. Isn't it amazing? And so this is what's so fun about the program. This is what's so great about my being able to bring you this information. You can look at this information, take it in, and make small, easy, simple changes to your lifestyle that will give your children benefits for their entire life. You need to give up soda for 9 months. That's it. And you make huge, massive changes in your children's life. So this is what it's all about. This is what we do. This is what we love. And so there you go. Go take this. Run with it. You know, live well and prosper, as Brock would say. And that's the whole thing. While I've got you here, I want to be sure that I let you know we are gearing up full bore. We talk about children, we talk about little kiddos, and my mind instantly goes to our mission trips over to Kenya to do the sealant program and the backpack program and the girls pad program. And we're gearing up. It looks like we're going to be going sometime in August this year. We're coordinating with the people there in the Maasai Mara because their school schedules have changed a little bit, and we absolutely want to be on the ground. We want to be there during school because it's so much easier to collect up the kiddos and bring them over to the clinic. So I want you to go to the website at ddsradio.com because there's a link over to the kinddentistry.org website. And so you can help us because we need your help. We need your contributions. We need you to help fund our travel, our supplies, all the things that we need to do. We treated over 100 children last time. We did 1,500 to 1,600 sealants. It was absolutely amazing, and we did it because of you. So there you have it. So up next, you get to meet my good friend Janet. Now, you may complain that you have to drive a ways to come to see me in my office. How about if you had to go 1,200 miles like she does? She'll tell you why she does it right after this.
You're listening to The Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. It's a fact. Patients travel to see Dr. Shoup from all over Indiana. They also fly into Indianapolis from all over the country to make sure they're treated by only him and his team. Microscope Dentistry by Shoup is the now and the future. You're listening to The Dr. Shoup Show. Read industry articles, see videos, and hear a ton of shows at ddsradio.com right now. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
It's great to have everybody here. Thank you very much. And as you all know, this is my favorite part of the program. I love this part because you get to meet really good friend of mine. And this is a really, really special good friend of mine. We have known each other, which we're not going to delineate how long, but we've known each other a long time. And are you sitting under a palm tree with a pina colada in your hand or anything like that right at the very moment? This is Janet, everybody. Janet, how are you?
Yes, fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. So I'm serious. Are you on your lanai or under a palm tree with a pina colada in your hand?
I actually am on the lanai, but I don't have a palm tree in my view. that I do not have a pina colada, sorry to say.
Well, son of a gun. We've got to get that fixed for you. So, you know, I was telling everybody, Janet, you and I have known each other a long time, and you come all the way up from Florida to come visit me at the office. Even when you moved there, you've stayed faithful, and we've get together twice a year. Why on earth do you do that?
Well, because I like you and I like your work. And anytime I've ever been to another dentist, they've always say, oh, who did that clown work or who did whatever? And I always tell them who did it. And it's always you.
Well, I thank you very, very much. And that's a pretty good testimonial. If other dentists are looking at my stuff and going, hey, that's not too bad, I'll take that for sure. You and I have known each other for a long time. And like you mentioned, we've done a bunch of restorative work. How has it been holding up for you?
Well, everything is fine. Yes, like you said, I come to see you twice a year, and we have a to-do list, and we take care of anything that needs to be done. So far, it's working just fine.
And then so we spend a little time together, we fix things up, and then we pat you on the back and you head back to the sunny south, and then we see you 6 months later, and we do it all over again. Happily, we've not had to do too much too recently, because most of the things that we've done have been holding up so incredibly well. What was, refresh my memory a little bit, when we first got together, and you know, like I said, we're not going to go into details about how long ago that was. My memory serves me, we kind of had a lot of fixing to do.
Well, yes, at the time I had gum recession, and I was quite a bit younger. I was concerned that, oh my heavens, I might have false teeth someday. I'd lived in fear of that, so you assured me that you could fix me my mouth and we wouldn't have to worry about false teeth. So I was happy to hear that sentence.
And I've held to my promise so far, haven't I?
Yes, you have.
Because you don't have anything close to that. You're fantastic. I really appreciate it. So anyway, so now people know why a crazy woman from Florida keeps coming all the way back up here to Indiana, because you were petrified you were going to lose your teeth, and I told you, no, kiddo, you and I hang together, and you'll keep them forever, and you have, so that's pretty cool.
Yes, I agree with you. It is pretty cool, all right.
All right. Well, Janet, thank you so much for spending some time with me and sharing your story with all the folks that listen. I really appreciate it. You're absolutely wonderful. And I tell you what, I truly honor the fact that you indeed do come all the way north out of, I mean, it would be a hard job to pull me out from under that palm tree with your pina colada and off your lanai in this kind of weather. But I sure appreciate the fact that you do. So thank you.
Well, you're very welcome.
All right. I'll see you at the office next time, kiddo. Bring us some sunscreen.
Oh, well, okay. I'll try to bring a little sunshine with me.
Put it in a bottle. I appreciate it. All right, Janet. Thank you very much.
Okay. It was great talking to you. Bye.
Bye. Well, there you have it. I hope that was enough information for you. Holy cow, you needed a pencil and a paper and Evelyn Wood's speed writing class. If you're old enough to know what Evelyn Wood's speed reading was, you'll know that that was a joke with Evelyn Wood's speed writing class. If not, go Google search it. It's kind of weird. But anyway, thank you very, very much for being here. We try to bring you all the information that we possibly can, particularly when you send us requests. And the high fructose corn syrup and the asthma and so forth was actually the first of those articles was presented to me by one of my listeners. Thank you very, very much. And I started looking at this and then doing my other Medline searches and found the second article, and I was able to put them together for you. If you have a topic, if you have a issue, if you have some subject that you want me to investigate, look at, research, and bring to the program, all you have to do is go to the website at ddsradio.com. Simply jot me a note. I look at them all the time. I write them down. I take them to heart, and I will go do my due diligence, and I will do the research, and I will bring it here to the program. I thank you very much for doing that. It really, really, really makes the show better. And I want you to be sure to watch the website, because you know the mission trip is coming up, and we certainly need your help. So until you and I chat next time, be sure to Brush and Floss.
Keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling, baby, the whole